corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, and welcome to Canmore as we welcome you to this hour of Flames Talk. It is Friday, January 17th, and from Canmore, it's Steinberg and Vickers on Flames Talk. We are here for the 25th anniversary of Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, which goes on Saturday. The Flames and Jets will be a part of Hockey Day in Canada here in Canmore. It's cool that Hockey Day is right in our backyard, and because it's Hockey Day, everybody's been out here in Canmore over the last 24 hours or so. Morning show is here. Logo is here. And now you and I here for the next couple of hours on Flames Talk. And we're right at the Celeb Hotel.
We are.
The
people watching is amazing.
You walk through you sit here in the lobby like we're doing, little fireside chat, and you just lasso some human beings. No, this is all booked in advance, but our good buddy Kelly Rudy is with us. He'll be a part of Hockey Day in Canada all day on Saturday here in Canmore. Mr. Rudy, how are you?
Pat and Aaron, I'm doing really, really well. I'm not saying this just to be overly dramatic, but whenever the schedule comes out for the season, I always look at when is Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, because I of course know the location and I hope to be a part of it. And it happens to be going back 25 years when it started. One of my favorite things, simply because when we go to these, especially when we come to towns like Canmore, the smaller centers, the people around the city, the town, they gather around the arena. That's the hub, right? So everybody comes. They come in the morning, and they're watching their son or daughter, and they stay all day long, it seems. They're not just watching their own child play hockey. They stay for their friends, and it's a real community gathering. And I fell in love with it the first time I was a part of Hockey Day in Canada.
Yeah.
And it still remains true. I just love it.
Are you so Ron's hosting all day,
as he always does, in a spectacular way, right?
So, and you're part of the 12 and a half hours too, right? Like,
yeah,
you're right from start to finish on Saturday.
Yeah, Elliot and I have a signing tomorrow, autograph signing. I want to say around 9:30 or 10, and then we'll go back to the hotel, get ready, and go back to the arena. So, and we don't get off till 11 at night, which, by the way, as you guys know, is a break from our normal Saturday night,
yeah,
which in Toronto, we don't get off till at least 1 in the morning. So I'm looking at tomorrow and go, oh, that's an easy day to get off at 11 at night. What's so hard about that?
Well, for you, it's a rare weekend where you're not doing the 4.5 hours each way in the air, right?
That's right. So there's that, but... Yeah, I'm just so thrilled to be here. It's busy, though. Like, we got here yesterday, my wife and I. We had a couple of events to do. There's a big banquet that David Amber and Ivanka Osmak hosted, which was amazing. Ron had some of us up on a panel, including Colin Patterson and Lanny and Kevin Bieksa. And, of course, Kevin couldn't shut up, and so he had to steal the microphone basically from Ron and regale the whole 450 people with his view of the world and his stories. And I know he's going to be able to rebut that because he's on right after me, but I have to give him a little shot just because I'm the veteran. He's kind of there. He is.
Uh-oh.
He is walking into the lobby, and of course he's trying to chirp us and also trying to steal the spotlight, because that's what Bieksa does.
Did you guys time that? Because that couldn't have been more
really
perfect.
I know.
How was he received? Southern Alberta has not always been the most hospitable place for Mr. Bieksa. Was there any booze in the crowd?
No. So here's my take, and Kev, I'm sure, will tell you his version of it. But oftentimes when I was in around Alberta, especially in Calgary, when we hired Kevin, and of course he took off immediately, and most people, Flames fans, came up to me and said, I hated that guy.
Yep.
I thought he was the biggest jerk in the world. It usually is a little bit more graphic than jerk.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden they got to see him for a while on hockey night. They go, we love him. the best part of Hockey Night and those sorts of things. And so I wouldn't say that necessarily. I'd say he's a small fraction of our Hockey Night panel. But you can tell we go out and we chirp each other all the time, and along with Elliot and Ron and Jennifer and David, it's a great group.
We when his first year working with us, he came on once a week with us, and the text line was the exact same thing. Like,
right?
I used to hate that guy, and now I'm having a hard time not liking him because he's really good. So, yeah, that's a kind of a universal thing, I think, from a lot of Flames fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I've gotten to know him away from the camera, and that's the thing. He's even more likable, which is hard to imagine because he really comes across as a person you'd want to hang out with.
Did you know that Saturday is the 11th anniversary? You and Rick Ball at Rogers Arena the Brawl in Vancouver. 11 years tomorrow.
Okay, I didn't know that, but I've got a little backstory for you.
Yeah.
So, Pat and Aaron, I don't know if you know this, but our director that night, our producer was a guy by the name of Tim Davis. I worked with Tim for years and years and years. And our director that night was a guy by the name of Ron Forsythe. He is like legendary in our industry, still is. He sort of stepped away from the biz because he's nearing retirement. And so that night, we're watching everything unfold, and then we're going to commercial break at the end of the first period. That camera that saw that action, that's not being recorded. So if Ron Forsythe didn't happen to look at the monitor in the truck and see what was going on behind the scenes and then go camera 9 or whatever the number is, that would have never been captured. So that was a stroke of luck. As Tim Davis was told to me, he's counting down to go to commercial, like 7, 6. Ron Forsythe sees it, goes, stop camera 9 or whatever. And then all of a sudden, Tim Davis stops the commercial count, because typically on network television, once you start a countdown, you're going to break. Like, there's usually, because you can't go to black, right? That's bad television.
Yep.
So it was really cool to hear the story behind the scenes that Ron saw it, and we ended up getting 2 minutes of extra action or something, and the whole world saw it. And otherwise, that would have never been captured.
Well, I have the audio because we're making it part of our first intermission on Saturday for the game. And I have the audio of you and Kelly that night. And
Rick?
Kelly and Rick. Sorry, you and Rick that night.
Yep.
And you can hear the music as if you're going to break.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they dial the music back.
Okay.
And then Rick's like, oh, wait a second. What do we got going on here?
That's right.
And all of a sudden all of the view of the locker room. So
now you can share that story. How Ron Forsythe saved the day, in a sense, for television. Probably didn't save the day for both organizations.
No.
Knowing it was going to be shown on national television, but it sure was good for us.
Yeah, that was a night I will never... I remember exactly where I was. It was one of the years where Ryan Pinder was doing 7 or 8 games for me on Flames games. So I was watching that game at the old keg. Remember the... Oh. Not the keg now on 4th, but the keg on 11th. I was watching it right there
right in the belt line.
Yeah, right in the belt line.
Yeah, for sure.
It's exactly where
I've been there many times.
Now, Kel, just to follow up on this, did you think anything was awry when you would have seen the starting lineups for the Flames and then seeing what the Vancouver Canucks were countering with? Because sitting up there, I was fortunate enough, I was working with the Flames at the time, so I was in the building, and cameraman Stump, actually, of all people, pointed at me. He goes, look who the Flames are starting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it became... look who the Canucks are starting.
Yeah.
And the sort of the anticipation built from there, and it certainly didn't disappoint.
Well, Kevin, I'm sure when he joins you, he'll have his version, because his, as a player, his version is a little bit different than ours as a broadcaster. But to your question, Aaron, when I saw that, no, because remember, I played in the 80s and 90s, especially the 80s, when it was not uncommon to start lineups like that, right? Like, both teams were sending messages. And so, and that is kind of one thing that I kind of don't agree with. In my opinion, you are allowed to start anybody that is on that game sheet, right? If it's all those physical kind of guys, in my opinion, I don't care what message you're sending, but they're on your game sheet. You can start them.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that. Whatever outcome happens, that's the game of hockey. That's sport.
We're chatting with Kelly Rudy, joining us here in Canmore ahead of the 25th Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada on Saturday. I know Kel's looking forward to it.
Yes.
All day, 12 and a half hours from Canmore, including the Flames and Jets at 5 o'clock on Saturday as part of Hockey Day in Canada. Boy, I don't know if you have checked in much or been listening much, but pretty much all week, this guy and I, we've been talking about Dustin Wolf, Dan Vladar, usage,
I've listened.
That type of stuff. How much fun has this Dustin Wolf story been for you as the color voice of the Flames, as a former goalie? Like, how much fun has this story been for you to watch?
Oh, it's been tremendous. I think because, you know, his development, his growth, the way in which he's played, the way he carries himself, I think it's been real fun to watch for me. The conversation I had with Ryan Huska, a private one about 6 weeks ago, it was something like, don't we think that this narrative about his size is gone? Like, we're well past that. Like, the way he's played is no longer a part of the conversation because he's proven that size doesn't matter in the sense of how he can cover the net, how he can get across laterally. Everything he does, he's proven, as he has his entire life, that this is a non-issue. In fact, where was I? Maybe Edmonton. I had to do part of a broadcast in Edmonton on Monday, and somebody brought it up, and I said, kind of like, stop. You know, we're past that. Like, you must not have been watching Dustin Wolf all season long if that's still a part of your conversation. Now, getting back to the Vladar conversation and how I know you guys talk about the – I don't pay attention to that. The social media, I guess, blows up, and
yeah,
we want Dustin to start every single night.
Yeah.
Thank you for that information, you guys, because otherwise I would not have been aware of it. But – Vladar has played extremely well in my mind, too, and he's really endeared himself to his teammates, and it was kind of cool. About a week and a half ago, I happened to be on the Flames trip in California when the Mums were there, and Sunday night, I flew from Toronto on Sunday, even though the game was Tuesday in Anaheim, and it happened to be that a bunch of the Mums and the players came into the lounge where the hotel we're staying in, and I was there after dinner, and I got a chance to meet some of the Mums and talk to some of the guys and stuff, and it was funny because some of the Mums were talking about I used to play goal and stuff, and some of the Mums were, one of our favorite players is Dan Vladar, just because of his personality, how
yeah,
he's endeared himself to his teammates, the families, and, you know, he's just such a really good guy. I didn't like the fact that he took a sip out of my red wine without me asking.
Ooh.
Me. That was a little offside, but having said that, I was okay with that. But anyways, he's played really, really well. He's underappreciated here in Calgary for me because of the kind of starts that he gets. He's not really given some of the lighter workload. He's got a really tough situation, yet I never see him complain.
Yep.
I never see him be that bad teammate. Now, you can be disappointed if you're not starting, right? There's no rule in the world that says as if you're told you're the backup that you can't be disappointed, that you shouldn't be mad. You're competitive. You can be mad. You can show a little bit of, I want to play, right? I remember there are many times in my career where maybe the other guy got a couple extra stars. Well, you know who taught me this? Billy Smith. So Billy and I were competing. He, of course, was the legendary goalie that won four consecutive cups, took him to a fifth. We lost Edmonton. But when I started to get a bit of I don't know what the word, not a grip, but I started to take over a little bit. And I remember the first time I saw him barge into Al Arbor's office, I was like, I wonder what that's about. Next thing you know, Billy's starting the next game. And I'm like, oh, it doesn't take me long to figure this out.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Next time when I got on a bit of a roll and Billy was going to march into Al's office, I was like, I'm going in right behind him because I'm going to get ahead of this conversation. And so when Billy would speak his words, I'd go, that's not right. I deserve to play, and I mean that in the most endearing way with Billy. He taught me about fighting for my job, and Billy and I still remain great friends because I've kept telling him, you taught me so much how to fight for myself, and that because I probably wouldn't have known to do that. I probably, earlier than that, whatever the coach said, I just agreed with, whereas he taught me that. And then Byron Defoe, I played with Byron in L.A., and he started to get some footing and stuff. And he told me something similar in retirement. We were at Predator Ridge one day, and he said, you know what I'd learned from you, Kelly, and I never forgot it? You've got to fight for your spot, and it's okay. And there should be that healthy competition between two goalies that challenge themselves and make sure that the organization knows we both want to play. And that took it in a long route there, but that's what Dustin and Dan are trying to do and should do.
Let me ask you this, because Pat ran the numbers prior to the game against St. Louis, the second of the two set. Mm. The Calgary Flames are scoring half a goal more on average with Dustin Wolf in net than they are Dan Vladar. And some of it we pointed to, okay, it's the difficult spots that Dan Vladar has been put in. It's the second of back-to-backs. The quality of competition might be a little bit higher. From your experience, is there anything we're missing in that? Is there another element you can point to as to, like, half a goal a game is significant, especially when you're only scoring three a night?
I don't think there is, and I listened to that conversation. I was trying to rack my brain about that, around that, and I heard all the theories and everything. You guys did a great job trying to break that down and figure it out. And sometimes I don't know if there is any real reasoning behind it, and I have a story. So my last year in the NHL was in 97-98, and my partner was Mike Vernon. Of course, Mike was just coming off a Conn Smythe year winning the Stanley Cup with Detroit, and I knew he was going to play the boatload of games, and I was just there in a supporting role. And yet, strangely enough, and we were fighting, we were almost identical with the Flames this year. We were fighting for a playoff position, and then we had a real good charge the last, say, 2 or 3 months, and we made it into the playoffs. But for whatever reason, if you look at my numbers that year, my goals against and save percentage, I don't think it was too bad, but my win-loss record was horrible. It was horrendous. But I was not getting goals scored for me. I just, and there's no reason for it. Like, I was, you know, Mike was having a great year. He was our MVP. But I couldn't explain why, whenever I played, we just couldn't score. And I know one of my teammates, Bernie Nichols, brought it up after about, I had played 10 or 15 games, and he goes, guys, like, we got to figure this out. Like, that's just, it's not right. It's not fair.
Yeah. Well, here's the splits, Kelly, to refresh you, is you had a 274 goals against and an 897 save percentage. You were 4-16-2.
Yes.
Vernon was 30-22-8 with an 896 save percentage. So his save percentage was one tick below yours, but you couldn't get more drastically different in the record.
I just could not understand how I couldn't get more goals for. And that's not criticizing anybody, not blaming anybody. Yeah. That's sports, right?
Yeah.
That's how it goes. Sometimes you just take it on the chin. You know, there are other seasons I had. I remember one year, jeepers, something like 91 or 92. And I want to say my record around All-Star break would have been like 500. I'm going to say 12-12 and something. And I think I finished like 27-13 or something like that.
26-13.
Oh, wow.
1990-91, yeah.
Okay, so, and again, there's no, I didn't play better in the second half. I played the same as I did in the first half. But as a goalie, sometimes you are... not a victim, but you're just a product of how the team's playing in front of you. And
that's right.
You have no idea, and there's no reasoning for it.
The
By the way, I can't believe I was close in my numbers.
You were just bang on, basically. You made my job easy.
I don't know my stats all that well. Like, I have a decent idea, but I'm not – I never really paid attention to him.
That's some good recollection, though.
For a 64-year-old, I'll take it.
This has got to be a lot of, like, just watching the Flames play and knowing what the feel was right from the beginning of the year and the whole idea of them wanting to prove people wrong. And through more than half a season, they've kind of done that. And you being around the group as much as you are, it has to have been a pretty fun season to be a part of this year, hey?
Well, you guys are around them as well. And so, you know, there's a they're very, very close. There's a uniqueness to this group in terms of how they care for each other and how they really play for each other. And, you know, sometimes you say it and you don't really see it and you don't believe it. You know, it's all like that's just what people say or athletes say. But around this group, I really believe it and I really see it. As I said, when I was on that mom's trip, and there's a real special bond with these guys. And so far, it has carried them to this point where they're right in the thick of it. And I don't see that going away. I really don't see them falling out of it. And because every time it seems as though something might lend you to think that way, they turn it around. Like, I was a little bit worried, I think it was late October when they had those two road trips in Vegas and Utah, and John Abbott and I were calling those games, and there were bad beatings, 5-1 and 5-0 or something like
those
that.
Those are the two scores, yep.
And I remember flying home with the team after the game in Utah, and I didn't share it with anybody. I'm personally thinking, boy, I wonder if they can regroup out of this. Because sometimes when you're young and inexperienced, when you get bashed like that, it can cause some damage, right? And you start to maybe not believe in yourself. But every time they're tested like that, they seem to come back.
Yep. You feeling like, are you ready? You ready to go for hockey day?
Good night's sleep? I'm ready.
Like, what needs to happen?
Good night's sleep. When have I had a good night's sleep?
That's fair.
We work late.
That's fair.
Right?
That's fair. So what is tonight? You got the alumni game.
Yes.
So what is the Friday night before hockey day look like?
Well, every year is different. So I can speak. Last year we were in Victoria, which was amazing. And so what did we do? So I don't play anymore. So I was a celebrity or guest coach. Cassie Campbell Pascal was a celebrity coach with me. And so you do that. Then you socialize in the dressing room forever. You have a couple of drinks. Then you go out and have a bite to eat with everybody and chat, and so you don't it's not an early night.
Yeah, okay.
And then you start up the next morning, but that's what it's all about, right? Getting together. Like, for instance, we're here in the hotel lobby. Last night we had that banquet, and then most of us from Hockey Night, Sports Night, we came right in this lounge and we chatted, and just it's kind of like the Flames family right now, the players, how they get along so well. So we always get together, and you'll see us here later tonight, I'm sure.
That's what I like to hear.
Yes.
Enjoy tomorrow, hey. Thanks for stopping by.
I will,
by.
Pat and Aaron. Thank you, guys.
Kelly Rudy is the color voice of the Flames. You can catch him every week on Hockey Night in Canada. And on Saturday, he will be a big part of Hockey Day in Canada, the 25th annual Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada right here in Canmore.
You know what I'm going to do?
What's that?
See that nice comfy chair right there?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm going to sit there and stare at Bieksa so he cannot chirp me. He can't say anything bad about me.
Like
how
that.
Do you like that?
My only concern is he's going to have a microphone and you're not.
Well, that's fair.
So if you need to, you can just stand up, come to this side of the table, give me the tap on the shoulder, okay, and I'll move over.
Well, yeah, we won't let him sue you. Don't
no.
Worry.
Okay.
We got your back.
Not our beloved Kelly Rudy.
Thanks, Kel.
Thanks, guys.
Good to see you, man. Yeah, Kelly same. Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, and on Saturday, the 25th annual Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, right here in Canmore, as Sportsnet and Hockey Day have invaded and hung out in Canmore since, Wednesday. They've been here through Wednesday, and we'll be here until Saturday at the end of the telecast. 12 and a half straight hours featuring all seven Canadian NHL teams starting at 11 o'clock Calgary time on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. Scotiabank has made Hockey Day available to stream for free in 6 different languages. So English on top of that, Mandarin, Cantonese, Hindi, Tagalog, Gujarati, and Spanish on top of English and French. That's all coming your way coming up on Saturday on Hockey Day in Canada. Now, because we're out here in Canmore, the Daily Flames Roundtable with Will Z, we're not doing on this Friday, but the Daily Flames Roundtable is always brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. This is going to be a tough game for the Flames as part of Hockey Day in Canada. The two St. Louis games on Tuesday and Thursday went exactly the way they didn't want them to, and now there's a 1-point gap in the wild card standings as opposed to a 5-point gap. That kind of turned into a bit of a nightmare trip to St. Louis for the Flames.
Yeah, I remember talking with you prior to the first game, and it was going to be the second of back-to-backs and 3-4 with a couple different stints of travel for the Calgary Flames, and our discussion was, well, you have an opportunity here to put a lot of wiggle room between yourself and the St. Louis Blues. And even if you earn a split, you've still maintained that gap and you still have 2 games at hand. Well, worst case scenario for the Flames, of course, dropping both of those to the Blues. And suddenly your margin for error, that wiggle room, has been reduced significantly. You still have a couple games at hand, but that would look a whole lot better if you also had a bigger gap.
Once again, Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you every day by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're hanging out here in Canmore for Saturday's 25th annual Hockey Day in Canada. 12 and a half hours starting at 11 o'clock Calgary time. All seven Canadian teams in action, including the Flames and Jets at 5 o'clock as part of Hockey Day in Canada. Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers, and now Kevin Bieksa.
Do they know that? So first of all, Kelly loves when I interrupt the host.
Yeah.
So I'm doing this for Kelly. I just interrupted him, Kelly, on his intro. Do they know the scene? Like, you're sitting in front of a beautiful fireplace. There's 50 elk outside the door that are 800 pounds grazing on the fields. This is where we are right now for Hockey Day.
It's not that you've seen the elk too. On the drive in, I was like, oh, that's a bunch of elk.
Huge. That's be a good place to be a grizzly bear.
Yeah,
for sure.
That would be a good little hunting ground for them for sure. And also to set the scene, the RoboCop sunglasses on Kevin Bieksa.
I'm basically a professional biathlete.
Yeah, that's
now.
Funny.
So I've been taught for the last few days and Canmore, and I was honestly surprised that I just dominated the sport so quickly. So,
are you surprised, though?
Not really, but, you know, I thought Elliot had a good showing, I guess, but I think I just took to it a little bit easier than
what,
he did.
What are you better at, the shooting part or the cross-country part?
The shooting was the part I was worried about because I've never shot that rifle, and the alignment and everything, but I had great teachers in the Gallo brothers. They made it really easy. Right away, they're like, you're going to hit the target. I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, this is the thing I'm the most nervous about. I've skied a ton. I love skate skiing, and I love cross country. So I wasn't worried about that. I knew I'd enjoy that part, but it was the shooting.
Okay.
And these guys made it so easy and lined me up, and then once you get it, you get it. It's funny, like, when you miss a target, for me at least, and I was explaining it to them, I go, before I pull the trigger, I don't feel confident. The ones where I felt like I'm lined up, I hit every one of those. He's like, well, then don't pull the trigger when you're not.
Yeah.
I'm like, good advice.
The show that you're on right now is called Flames Talk.
This is a flame show?
This is a flame show, yeah.
See ya.
So how does that feel being on a program named Flames Talk?
I just feel like I should be naturally booed on this show. No, I did Flames Radio a few years ago.
It was with me. And we were talking to Kelly, how he was like, everybody I talk to says, oh, I didn't like BX at all, but now that he's on TV or on the radio, that was our text line every time you're on. I hated that
guy. So I got that at the Chad Brown Lee concert, and then we had a reception last night.
Yeah.
And I probably got that 30 times from people. That's how they lead. I hated you. I really hated you. So usually I let them have the first one, or sometimes I'll fire back, like, don't like you either.
So is that a backhanded compliment, though? Because you must have done something right on the ice to not be liked.
I promise you I do not get offended by that comment. I take it as a 100% compliment.
Yeah.
It was a rival team for me for 13 years. Bitter rival in Anaheim as well.
Yep.
When I got to Anaheim, they had won, I think, like 15 or 16 games in a row at home against the Flames.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I walked into that, obviously, in Vancouver. Don't for a second take that as an insult.
You played in the series where the "you can't win here" chants were like you couldn't hear anything else.
Oh, the sweep? You're talking about when we swept them? That series?
Yeah, that is correct that you did. You did sweep them that
I'm
year.
Losing all my Flames fans that I won over.
Did you know we were talking to Rudy about this because he was there? I've spoken to you about this before when you used to come on with us, but it's 11 years tomorrow. Hockey Day is the 11-year anniversary of that John Tortorella, Flames Canucks brawl at Rogers Arena. That was 11 years ago tomorrow.
That was a lot of fun. I wish that those are the moments that you wish you could recreate in retirement, but you don't get that opportunity. So it can't happen out of nowhere. Obviously, I think the Flames were the instigators in that. I was told, so I don't know if people know this, I grew up with Brian McGrattan.
Okay.
We're the exact same age. We used to play on summer hockey team, tournament teams. Back, he was Hamilton, I was Stony Creek. They're right beside each other. Our dads were friends. They'd stand beside each other at the game. So I've known Gratz forever. So when he's on one side of the rivalry, I'm on the other. All the Flames guys used to say, oh, I hate Bieksa. Like, kill that Bieksa for me. Kill that. And he's like, I can't. Like, he's like my childhood buddy. Like, I just can't do it. So I had that going for me, right, in the line brawl. I knew I wouldn't have to fight Gratz. So.
Okay.
But the whole thing happened because the fourth line started. And to their defense, it was because I guess they had a good game the game before that, and they wanted, and it's not uncommon to start your fourth line. But Gratz tells me that it wasn't Hartley so much as them, like, hey, we're starting, like, let's make a splash in Vancouver. And then everything happened organically after that. Like, McGrattan asked Sestito. Sestito could have said no. He's like, nope, yeah. You know, Lundmark, I think, was on the other side. He asked Dale Weiss. Dale Weiss could have said no. Nope. He said yes. So now you got two starting off. And that's the way the whole line brawl started. And then everybody else just kind of found a partner.
Is that still the only face-off you've ever taken? Because didn't you?
No, I've taken two.
Taken two, okay.
I won. I got credit for a loss. It was like a 3-on-5 or something like that.
Okay.
But I was a centerman until I was 15.
So okay.
I'd always take face-offs at the end of practices with the centermen. Just to kind of like rub it in their face so that a D-man can beat them. But I snapped that one back.
You did.
On Westgarth.
Yeah, you did. I remember that. And then it didn't really matter.
Which you
that.
Did not get credit for the win on that.
No.
I've got the sheet here.
You sure?
Yeah, I've got it pulled up. The actual play-by-play. Westgarth versus BX. Oh, no, Van neutral zone win. My
yes.
apologies.
Okay.
You did get
yeah,
it.
I would be surprised because I'm pretty sure it's in my stats.
Yeah.
The stat pack.
Because you did.
He probably wasn't too interested in the puck drop anyway.
Hey, win's a win.
Hey.
Win's
not win. Criticizing.
Win's
not criticizing.
I don't care. Another funny thing about that is I had a beer with Westgarth 2 weeks prior on the road. We kind of crossed paths in Nashville where we were playing them and then they were coming in next. So I'd had a conversation and sat down with them and kind of got to know him on that side before. And then when everything happened, it just made it even more kind of awkward.
Yeah. So did this not sort of come to fruition until you guys are literally lining up? As you mentioned, you've got one request to go here. You've got another request to go there. Then you see Westgarth take the draw, and that's when you move in for, was it Kellen Lane? I'm trying to remember the guy's name. His first NHL game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so it started in the dressing room when Torts read out their starting lineup. And he reads out, and you could tell he's upset. He goes, They're starting their idiots. So I got to start ours. He goes, I can't start the Sedins because who knows what's going to happen. So I got to start our idiots. So he's like, Sestito, Weiss. I don't know if I put my hand up or I was already considered an idiot, but I think I'm like, can I be one of the idiots? So we kind of had an idea. But then, like I said, you can see what's happening before the puck drop. I saw Sestito McGrattan because it was like a simple want to go. Yeah. And then they kind of back away. So you can tell that one's happening. I could tell the Weiss one was happening. And then everything else was kind of in the air. Like Westgarth is trying to get us, you know, keep the kid stick. And the kid, when he signed with us, did not want to fight. He's like, I'm not a fighter. I'm 6'6", but I don't want to fight. So I kind of knew that going in. So I kept going into Westgarth. Like, what are you doing? He's like, what? Nothing. So it wasn't like Westgarth was, it was very unclear what was going to happen.
Yeah. I have to ask you, speaking of Vancouver, like what is your, we're talking to Kevin BX of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. I had a hockey day in Canada on Saturday. What is your observation of the lockout from the outside, the reporting of the locker room drama in Vancouver, the JT, the Elias Pettersson? How has this all kind of struck you being a former Canuck?
I mean, obviously I don't like it. I always took pride in the culture that we had in Vancouver that we built. You know, the last of our era were the Sedins that retired. They retired at the end, you know, after Kessler, after myself, after Burroughs. And then from there, you just kind of hope that the culture carries on and the tradition carries on. And I know a bunch of those guys in the locker room, and, for it to get out like it has, it must be pretty, pretty bad, right? So, because there's a lot of NHL teams and locker rooms where guys don't like each other. But for it to actually get out, there must obviously be something there. Can it be resolved and fixed? That's up to them, right? That's up to them and if they want to figure this out and be men. Otherwise, yeah, I guess you got to move one person or the other. But I think it's one of those things where you're the Canucks. To remedy the dressing room, you move one of those guys, you're going to have a very hard time finding a replacement.
Yeah.
You'll never find a JT Miller replacement in the league right now, and I don't even think you'll find a Pettersson replacement. So it's going to be really hard to move one of those guys and live with, you know, not having that guy in your lineup for the next 5 years.
Is there a market in the NHL that compares to Vancouver? Like, it just, there always seems to be something, whether it from outside, there always seems to be some sort of large controversy in Vancouver. That's just the observation from 900 kilometers east. You've been in that market. Like, is there anything like it?
It likes drama, for sure. Obviously, Toronto's similar. Montreal from a different end. But you're right. Like, it does seem like there is a lot of drama. Is part of that the media? I don't know. You got a lot of competitive media guys there and girls that want to talk about stuff and can't always talk about how good everybody is. So that's part of it right there. That's a big part of it. And then, you know, there's a passion for the team. The team's always had a bit of a target on them. The people in Vancouver love them. Most of the rest of the league hates them. So they have that kind of, so feel like that kind of stirs the pot a little bit, but it seems that way, doesn't it? We had a couple quiet years when we were really good. It's funny when you're winning, things are quiet.
Those President's Trophies kept the drama pretty low.
When you're not
right?
winning, you got the Bruce Boudreau controversy. Now you got this. It's always usually around winning and losing.
Yeah. Well, and with Pettersson and Miller, they're the same two guys they were last year when they won the Pacific Division. How rare is it? I just imagine it like it being a workplace where if you have 24 other coworkers, chances are you're not best buds with each and every one of them anyway. It just so happens that maybe things aren't going the way the Canucks were hoping this season, so then it becomes a new narrative again.
And you're talking about probably, other than Quinn Hughes, the two best players on the team.
Yeah.
So that's why it's such a big deal. We're not going to keep talking about it, are we?
We can move on.
I'm done with it.
I'm just kidding.
I've been like, this is really a thing. Like, I can't remember the last time there was locker room rifts that turned into something like this in the NHL. It happened.
It's been a while.
So rare that because most of the time it's everybody's pretty tight and that stuff. Like, teams do a really good job of insulating that. So the fact that it's gotten out is what's made it so fascinating. It's less the actual story itself. It's more that turned into a story.
And you look at what probably makes it worse is you look at the comparables. So you have Draisaitl, McDavid, best friends.
Yeah.
Marner and Matthews, best friends, right? Like, in Calgary, probably don't maybe have the superstars to that degree, but it seems like Huberto and Kadri have played with both of them. I know they get along.
Yep.
So you don't really have the same, you know, friction in other Canadian markets. That's probably like Brady and Stützle, best friends, kind of the same thing.
Montreal,
Caulfield and Suzuki, best buds.
Yeah.
Right? So that maybe is part of it.
Well, Huberto and Kadri have talked, you know, pretty at length about how they've kind of really grown their relationship from when they got here to now they really are. They're like thick as thieves and a big reason why all of a sudden they're playing well together on the ice too when that was not really a thing prior to
Elliot
this
and I, best buds.
Is that like the...
You and Kel?
Me and Kel, best ball. Kel bullies me a little bit, but I really respect him. I don't know if it's mutual, but I really respect Kel.
And he wasn't even around here to hear that this time. It was a compliment. He's so worried about you shooting barbs at him.
Backhanded.
He said he was going to sit there and
watch. Well, my boss is here, so I got to be politically correct. I love working with Kelly. No, Kelly's great. You can't tell me we don't have some chemistry in our panel. You could tell we all like each other.
It's an outstanding panel you guys have got going on. What... We're talking to Kevin Bieksa. What have your observations been of the Flames and a year that has definitely taken a lot of people by surprise?
They're kind of the Vancouver Canucks of last year, right? Same thing, low expectations coming into the season. They knew they'd be fighting for a playoff spot, but I don't think most people thought they would be in like they are. Big part of that, and had an opportunity, I've known this guy for a few years, is Dustin Wolf. So skated with Dustin Wolf 2018 when he was with Everett. I went up there for a week to train before the Spengler Cup because I knew the head coach. I went to school with him, Dennis Williams, World Juniors coach. And so I skated and shot on Wolfie for a good week and hung around him a lot and kind of saw, telling me how good this kid was. And I'm like, okay, you know, cool story. Like, everyone's good. Everyone thinks they're the best in the WHL. But followed him now, golfed with him in the summer, and his goalie coach, because he spends time down in California, and got to kind of talk to him. And the funny thing about him is he knew and I knew going into camp it was going to be 1A, 1B with Vladar. And I kind of said to him, just kind of joking around, and he's a great kid, and I'm like, how long before you're just starting every hockey night in Canada Saturday night? I get to start, you know, talk about you every Saturday night. And he kind of looked at me, and not in a disrespectful way, he's like, I'll get there. Just the confidence that he has in him. Obviously loves playing with Vladar and competitive and friends, but you could tell it's a kid that's got a ton of skill, a little bit of swagger, believes in himself, and he's a big reason why the Flames are where they are.
You've been on really good teams. You've been on teams that have gone to cup finals and won President's Trophies and all that type of stuff, but also have been on teams where maybe the expectations were lower. Like, what can that do inside a room when you've got a bunch of guys who know that nobody really is counting on them to do anything?
I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I was lucky enough that I didn't ever play on a team that wasn't expected to make the playoffs before the regular season. So
everyone you played on was of that ilk, hey?
The Anaheim teams, we were Stanley Cup built all 3 years, and we lost in the semis the 1 year to Nashville, the year that Pittsburgh, Sid won his last one. I really feel like that was maybe the year that I missed, that we could have won the whole thing. We had an unbelievable team. So all 3 years in Anaheim, we're competing for the Cup, not just to get into the playoffs. Vancouver, at the end, we missed the 1 year with Torts, but that was supposed to be a really good season as well. We missed the playoffs that year, and the only other year I missed the playoffs was earlier in my career when I was kind of, you know, an up-and-coming guy, and it was at the end of Naslin, Bertuzzi, Morrison.
So that early stages, even when you were breaking in, the expectations were still, like, playoffs or bust in Vancouver?
Yeah, oh, yeah, 100% they were. Because when I came in, the Sedins were second liners, were on the second power play unit, and then I kind of saw them take over and then blossom into what they were. And then once they got going, and then we started bringing in Matt Sundin and Pavel Dimitra and some of these serious vets. Like, these aren't trade deadline, like, little additions.
Yeah, yeah.
These are serious guys you bring in to put you over the hump. So we were competing for a cup from 2007 until 2014.
So,
and the same thing in Anaheim after.
Theoretically, then, what could that do to a team when you just nobody really believes and you've got that kind of thought on the outside that, hey, these guys aren't going to be very good this year.
Are you talking about Vancouver again?
Or the Flames this year. And then, because that's kind of been the one constant from right at the beginning of the season.
Well, mentally, it's easier when you're an underdog and the expectations are low. When expectations are high, it's very hard to meet them. So, you know, they're almost thriving off of the underdog role. They're not expected to make the playoffs. They weren't definitely at the beginning of the season. And there's even a lot of teams in the NHL that are probably looking at them like they're not serious. They're not going to be there at the end. There's a lot of season left, but that's a great place to be. It's an unbelievable role to be an underdog and to keep proving people wrong. And I feel like if the Flames are going to keep having success, it has to be with that attitude. They can't start thinking that they're sweet and they're better than everyone they play. Like, I love their gritty team. I love Pospisil. It's too bad Zari's hurt, but I heard that's not too... Like, I love Uyghur. There's so many guys in their team. Cods, obviously, the way he plays. It's a good team, but it's like a gritty team, and they have to remember that.
Is that underdog mentality, and you can speak to either the Flames specifically or just generally, but is that sustainable over an 82-game schedule, or do you get to a point where you're competitive enough where it doesn't feel like you can buy into that narrative anymore that everybody's against us and nobody believes in us when you are contending for a playoff spot?
It's tough, for sure, and that's where you need really good leadership and good coaching. Leadership from up top and leadership within the room, just to keep that focus.
Okay.
And the coaches have to understand, if you're playing like that every game, there has to be a little bit of a balance with the practice days. You can't be doing battle drills every day in practice, battling every game. Like, something gives at some point. So it has to be managed very, very strategically, I think.
With that, from your perspective, when you watch the Flames, how sustainable is that style of play? Because when they're on, they have to be on 100%. You can't dip down to 80 and still reach into the back pocket and pull out 2 points. You have to be going 100%. You have to be going through the wall basically every night to stay competitive.
Well, I think they get used to it. I think you get used to that being the standard to play. And the thing about them is they don't cheat the game, because they can't. They don't have the high-end power that Edmonton has or Toronto. So they can't cheat the game. They have to play the same way. They got to forecheck. They got to manage the puck. They can't always make plays off the rush. Sometimes that puck just has to go in deep and grind teams down and play the long game, the more high percentage game. So you think that's drilled into them enough over the year where it just becomes second nature and routine.
Well, we'll let you go, but before we do, how excited are you for Saturday? 12 and a half hours and Hockey Day in Canada. I know you've been a part of this before, but what's the excitement level as we get set for tomorrow?
Well, just getting out of the studio and being in the rink, and there's going to be a AJHL game going on in the background. We're set up in the arena on the one end there in the corner. You know, Canadian-on-Canadian matchups in three of the games. So, and then we got the Boston Bruins against the other Canadian team. So just, it's going to be exciting. You've seen the scene around here. It's beautiful backdrop. We have a big, big alumni game tonight before we get to tomorrow. So there's definitely bragging rights, and there's... It's funny because a lot of people are like, what's this alumni game like? Like, how serious is it going to be?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, we're playing to win. It's going to be really serious. So obviously, like, I'm not going to be that serious out there, but I feel like it's going to be more intense than people think. So we get through the big game tonight, and then tomorrow we're NHL hockey all day. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Who's on your team? I saw the roster. I haven't memorized
it. So I drafted David Amber first pick. I have Andrew Ferrance. I took him early because I've played with him before in these games, and he's good. Curtis Glencross, Colby Genoway, Rob Skurlak was a tough guy in the AHL. Luckily, I didn't have to play against. So I got a lot of those type of players. Sean Brown, I played with in Vancouver for a very, very short time. Jason Chimera, played with him at the World Championships. Like, my team's way better than the other team. I don't know what Ron's going to do.
He's you and Glenn Cross the same. I remember some good battles between the two of you in the heyday of the Flames Vancouver rivalry.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a rat back in the day, wasn't he?
Which
better to play with him than against him?
Flames got the rat fans on my team.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Enjoy tomorrow. Thanks for being out here. It's cool to have you out here in Southern Alberta. Kinda. It's good to. Thanks for being on Flames Talk.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Kevin Bieksa joining us here in Canmore as we move towards Hockey Day in Canada on Saturday. 12 and a half hours of Hockey Day in Canada. It'll be Ron McLean, Kelly Rudy, Kevin BX, everybody that you're used to on the panel. They're out there. They're at the Canmore Rec Center. AJ game with the Eagles going on in the background will be really cool. And all seven teams in action. I like what they're doing this year. Obviously, Hockey Day is always available in English and French and our two official languages. But this year, thanks to Scotiabank, Hockey Day is going to be available to stream for free in six different languages. On top of that, Mandarin, Cantonese, Hindi, Tagalog, Gujarati, and Spanish, all on sportsnet.ca/hockeyday. Starts at 11 o'clock Calgary time, the 25th annual Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada. He does play. He happily wears the black hat when he comes and does things and talks about the Flames. He knows, and I really do appreciate how much he plays into it whenever he comes on with us.
I appreciate that he appreciates being hated for the player that he is, but loved for the broadcaster that he is.
There were some good battles like those. I mean, there is the. I know that the two series that the Flames played against the Ducks didn't go very well. The one that they got swept in, the one they got lost in 5-2. But the Flames did beat the Exa in a few playoff series.
I was going to say
at least one playoff series.
That 2015 run, if I'm not mistaken, that was the
Firkland.
The Firkland.
Yeah, that was. He'll never live that one down. And honestly, nor should he. He did do one. I was going to ask him here. I've asked him about it before. It was a playoff series. It was would have been 2013 when the Kings won their first cup, or 2012 rather. And en route to winning their first cup, they beat the Canucks in five games in the first round. The Canucks were President's Trophy winners that year. And after game three or four in L.A., the Canucks extended it to game five. And some guy in L.A. did an interview with Bieksa thinking he was Kessler. And so went up and just like started asking him. He's like, "Yo, what's up, Ryan?" Like, anyway, started asking him questions. And Bieksa just did the interview
as
if he was Kessler. And it was outstanding because he did the interview. He's like, "Oh, yeah, I mean, like..." He talked about how American players are the best players.
It
was really, really good. And the guy completely bought it. Thought he's like, "I'm getting the greatest stuff ever from Ryan Kessler." And it was like, it was actually Kevin Bieksa, one of my favorite stories of all time. Steinberg and Vickers, as this hour of Flames Talk is underway, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And on this Friday, January 17th, we're out here in Canmore getting ready for Saturday's Hockey Day in Canada. And hey, we're out here in Canada in Canmore, so this is even that much more relevant because Grizzly Paw Brewing raises money for hockey in the Bow Valley out here by celebrating Canmore's hockey legacy. Come enjoy the great taste of Grizzly Paw's new Hat Trick Blonde Ale during Hockey Day in Canada happening on Saturday. The Grizzly Paw Brewing Company has partnered with the local organizing committee for the 25th anniversary of Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada to create a custom beer that celebrates Canmore's hockey legacy. A dollar from every can sold will be donated to support and grow the sport throughout the Bow Valley. Obviously, a huge hockey tradition, whether it's the Eagles or more here in the Bow Valley and Canmore and beyond. And so this is outstanding. The beer is called Hat Trick Blonde Ale. It's a crisp, golden, refreshing blonde ale brewed for easy drinking with your team off the ice. It's a nod to the tradition of fans throwing their hats on the ice when one player scores three goals in a single game. It's a perfect after a beer league game. It's perfect. It's crisp. It's refreshing. Limited quantities of the Hat Trick Blonde Ale available at the Grizzly Paw locations in Canmore, plus Calgary Co-op and Willow Park Wines and Spirits in Calgary. The beer will also be available at all Hockey Day in Canada venues throughout the event week. Grizzly Paw Brewing, drafting engaging experiences since 1996. Visit them at thegrizzlypaw.com.